Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Thank you, world. Hour two underway on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. Chris Raybon writes for the Action Network, and you can see his work with Fantasy Labs as well. Top five in fantasy football ranking accuracy in 2019. He's a stud. He joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Chris, welcome back. Thanks for the time. You wrote a piece that caught our attention yesterday. We wanted to have you on to discuss it, and it's about how long it takes to figure out if your young quarterback has what it takes to be a long-term franchise QB in this league. Can you give the algorithm that you've kind of come up with and how it works first before we get into what it means for Haskins and the other youngsters in the league?
Absolutely. Good morning, and thanks for having me. I essentially wanted to look at how you know you don't have a franchise quarterback. And I applied a process that you can use for pretty much any type of projection or forecast, but I just found out when the different quarterback stats stabilize, which means they are predictive, right? So for a quarterback, adjusted net yards per pass attempt, which is a very good stat, you know, it highly correlated with point differential, especially just raw yards per attempt.
Dar, I'm going to throw him on hold real quick, see if he can work on his phone, because it's good information, but he's cutting in and out. And the idea here, Danny, is he's trying to quantify when a guy's performance in their career on average, based on looking back at all the quarterbacks, becomes what they became. Is it right away? Is it a couple hundred passes in? Is it 500 passes in? I think it's a smart idea, because the point
really
is that's when we can start to guess as to what a quarterback becomes.
And that best stat that he uses is adjusted net yards per attempt, which is passing yards minus sack yards plus a 20-yard per touchdown minus 45 yards per interception divided by total dropbacks. All that means is basically it's sort of a relative adjustment to what you're actually doing on the field. It's a way to quantify it, right? So touchdowns count because they're great. Interceptions count massively negative because they're killers, right? And then you start talking about sacks, which can be disastrous as well. When you drop back, what happens on average? And it's a pretty good number. The people that are atop of that adjusted net yards per attempt usually are the guys that are having those really good quarterback seasons.
All right, so let's bring Chris Raybon back on now from the Action Network. So we kind of described what your algorithm was. ANYA is what you call it, ANYA. So what did you find when you looked at the young quarterbacks in the league through that metric at this point?
Well, Dwayne Haskins, unfortunately, was at the bottom of the list, even, you know, with him only having, you know, about 400 or so dropbacks in his career. He projects as the worst quarterback in the league, essentially. And, you know, you kind of understand why Ron Rivera benched him. It doesn't look good for Sam Darnold either. He was the second worst. So those two guys, you know, their teams still may think there's some hope there, but it's very unlikely that these guys turn into a franchise quarterback, because you're talking about being at the bottom of the league. So even if you improve, it's tough even to get up to average. And Daniel Jones is kind of teetering on that slippery slope as well. He had a lot of touchdown passes. That was really his only standout metric in 2019. And those take a long, long time to stabilize. There's a lot of variance and noise there. So, of course, you're seeing this year, Jones didn't throw many touchdowns, and that was everything else. He was below average. So It's not looking good for Jones either.
So, Chris, the key phrase or takeaway from this is the stats that stabilize after a certain number of dropbacks. And I'm mm-hmm. sort of raised from the school of we got to give guys time to develop. We don't know what they are, you know, after a couple years or different schemes, et cetera. Do you factor in anything? Just thinking about Haskins specifically, right? This is his third head coach, second total offense with anything else. And the numbers don't look kind to him. And you pointed those out, and it's clear as day, and that's inarguable. Is there any kind of his later samples matter more or matter less? How do you weigh those kinds of things? Does that make sense?
Yeah, and so you could apply what I usually do in this case, because we're trying to compare all the different quarterbacks, is I will apply, you know, a regression to the mean. So when we say, you know, stabilizes after 400 dropbacks, that means you're essentially adding 400 dropbacks of league average performance to each player's stat. And so a guy like Haskins, he's going to benefit from only having a low number of dropbacks, in the sense that the metric is naturally going to give him more room for improvement. But even with that, he still projects at the bottom of the league. So some of the quarterbacks who did well, Gardner Minshew is at the top of the list. What he's doing in Jacksonville really goes unnoticed because their defense is so bad. They're giving up over 30 points a game. And Drew Lock also, because he doesn't make the negative play. He hasn't made a ton of great plays yet, but his interception rate is low. His sack rate is low. And so if he can just start making some plays and get that receiving core healthy, I think Locke has some promise as well. And Josh Allen is showing massive improvement, and that showed up in the numbers. Despite the bad game against the Chiefs, he's still looking like he's going to be just fine in the long term. So Baker Mayfield is kind of the guy in the middle where he's kind of like right below average. And the thing with him is he just struggles with pressure. So he may never really get to that true franchise quarterback status that the Browns, you know, hoped for. He may be like the 18th to 20th best starter in the league, but he's kind of right in the middle there, where he's not doomed, but it's not exactly looking promising either.
Chris Raybon of the Action Network on Grant and Danny. You know, we love this type of analysis, this type of numerical analytics, if you will. That's what we're all about on the show, and so I like it. And this happens to match kind of what my eyes tell me with Haskins. But here is, on the flip side, let me play devil's advocate for a second, I guess. The follow-up, if you are super pro Haskins or maybe worried about this metric, would be it can't take into account supporting cast in any way, obviously. So, I mean, there have to be examples. You know, Washington doesn't have a great group around Haskins. I think we overrate a little bit how little help he has. He's got Terry McLaurin, and they throw to the backs a lot, which is super quarterback-friendly. But, like, the Jets and Sam Darnold, I mean, he's got next to nothing right now. Frank Gore was their best offensive player a couple times this year. Daniel Jones, we just saw the Giants against Washington. He's throwing to, you know, banged up Darius Slayton and Golden Tate getting a couple targets a week. Like, how do you account for that when you look at these numbers? If you were to take Daniel Jones and just drop him into the Steelers, or take Dwayne Haskins and just drop him into the Chiefs, I'm not saying Dwayne Haskins would be great all of a sudden, but my question would be, like, how would that go differently for this Anya number?
Well, what would happen is, as we get a larger sample size, so let's say Haskins goes to the Steelers or some other good team, if he's playing, now that sample size is going to grow, and if he is, in fact, dependent on supporting cast, his numbers with the new team will be better, and then gradually that will start raising what we think his true, projection is. But the issue is, the great quarterbacks and even the good ones make the guys around them better. So, just like everyone's looking for a franchise quarterback and you can only have, 16 guys that are above average, it's the same thing with supporting cast. Tom Brady won a bunch of Super Bowls with, a lot of like Deion Branch and those guys before he got the big guns in kind of the middle of his career. So you look at guys like that, and the Chiefs, they're always going to be stacked. They have the best quarterback, and they have the best supporting cast, and they probably have one of the best coaches as well. But you need a quarterback. That's the whole point of a franchise quarterback. You need a quarterback to make the guys around him better, not play down to the level of that supporting cast.
Chris, there you mentioned Josh Allen in the piece as well. And if we stopped the sample at 407 dropbacks, right, early on in, into a second season, we'd think of him as a disaster. If we did that for Drew Brees in the middle of his second season as a starter in San Diego, we'd think of him as a disaster. So I guess that's my question is, how do you account for that, that sometimes guys improve or guys get into the right place and do an awful lot better? Because since middle of last year, Josh Allen's been awesome. And before these last couple games, may have been an MVP candidate. Give me your thoughts there about progression and how possible and likely it is.
Yeah, so the metric naturally captures this room for progression, because just because a metric stabilizes at, you know, let's say it's exactly 400. It's a little, it's about 407, but, you know, 400 dropbacks. So that doesn't mean that once you get to 400 dropbacks, whatever his numbers are, or it's like that's the true number. That just means that when you say something stabilizes, a metric stabilizes, that just means you're using in the projection 50% of his real numbers and 50% of a baseline, which you could regress to the league average, you could regress it to some age-adjusted baseline. But that's the fewer dropbacks you have, the more kind it's going to be to you, because you're going to be regressing more upward. So the issue is Haskins has been not just, you know, below average to where, okay, he only has 400 dropbacks, so it's about 50-50. He can improve. It's that he's league worst. So even if he improves massively, the chances of him actually getting to, you know, average or above average are a little slimmer. And in addition, a guy, and this is the one thing, and I talk about this, I mention it kind of for each quarterback, but the one thing adjusted net yards per attempt is not going to take into account is rushing production. And Dwayne Haskins has not really provided much of that for the Washington football team, whereas a guy like Josh Allen has for his team. So that's always going to kind of add another layer to it. And quarterback rushing production is actually extremely, quick to stabilize. So, I mean, you're talking about, you have a couple of games and you can kind of use his, you know, rushing yards per game and get a pretty accurate projection. So when you see a guy like Haskins, about 10 rushing yards a game of just a little under as a starter, that's not promising either. So that's kind of what separates Allen from a bunch of those guys. And yeah, he's of course dependent on his supporting cast, but you know, the numbers pick that up. That's the whole point of kind of doing the exercise is, you know, Allen still, you're still factoring in when he was really bad his rookie year into these projections as well. You know, he doesn't lose that or anything. Like, it's factoring all of these things in.
Chris, we're always looking for intel on Haskins, trying to figure out what he is and, you know, just how raw deal he got, or if they made the right decision, and this is instructive. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Smart stuff, man.
Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Chris Raybon, check him out, the Action Network. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. Week 6 of the NFL season is in the books. We didn't get yesterday to our observations, so we'll get to our three things we think next. Three things we think, observations after week 6 in the NFL season. Danny will be on the clock coming up in just a moment. I did want to let you know, though, Danny, I'm going to go on record, I think, here for the first time this week.
Whoa.
I think I'm going to pick Washington on the show on Sunday against Dallas.
Oh, man.
The Cowboys offensive line is starting to look a little bit like the Eagles in week 1, and you'll remember, while I did not pick Washington, I'm not going to take credit for that, I said on the show throughout the week I could see a path to just complete destruction at the line of scrimmage by this defensive line, because the Eagles' offensive line was in peril. They lost a player up front early in the game, and, you know, all hell broke loose. And you remember that was an 8-sack, 3-interception debacle for Carson Wentz. And his season has really gone that way ever since. But the Cowboys are going to be on their third left tackle. They lost a Hall of Fame interior lineman this past week that's probably not going to play in Zach Martin. They look a little bit like the Eagles did. So I could see this being, I know you miss Matt Ioannidis as your best interior pass rusher still, but Chase Young is due, in my opinion. He's been getting pressures without getting sacks. Montez Sweat is top 10 in the league right now in terms of pass rush productivity, according to Pro Football Focus. What percent of the time you get a quarterback hit, hurry, or pressure? He's 7th in the NFL. Ryan Kerrigan's not playing a whole lot, but he's been productive when he plays. I think this could be a big game for this defensive front.
So here's the math on this, right? If you believe that Washington can get pressure, then the next step is, how does Andy Dalton react to pressure?
Right.
He reacts to pressure the way you and I do. He's among the worst in this game of guys that regularly start football games at quarterback in terms of his rating against pressure, sack rate, turnover rate, all that kind of stuff. If you pressure Andy Dalton, you win the football game. Washington, in theory, can pressure Andy Dalton, and they got a chance to win the game. It's not a crazy take, my friend.
If Dak Prescott was starting, I'd pick Dallas. That's not to say that I think Andy Dalton is the problem for the Cowboys, but he's obviously a massive drop-off. And while I think he's going to look a lot better than he did, and that team should look a lot better than they did on Monday night against Arizona, you know, they still have problems. Ezekiel Elliott's fumbling all the time. Their defense has been dreadful from the start of the season. They drop just a lot terrible. Of passes. So I just think they're not that good. And now you got pressure against Dalton, and as you said, a guy that handles it poorly. There is a real path here for Washington to win on Sunday, and we can get more into that in a little bit. But I guess without further ado, let's get to the three things we think, and you may not have time to get to all three of yours, so we'll carry it over to the next segment, but let's at least get it started.
I'll go quick here, my friend. There's an R word that we're not allowed to say in Washington. No, it's not Redskins, my friend. It's rebuild. Nobody's ever been willing to actually see it through. They say they want it, and then they tell you after 4 weeks, no, let's start a journeyman. Let's start Colt McCoy. Best chance to win. All the dumb phraseology that people who are satisfied with being mediocre to poor have used in Washington for decades. The Miami Dolphins, rebuilding. The Las Vegas Raiders, rebuilding. That's what it looks like. You trade away aging commodities that aren't going to be good for you in a couple years. You acquire a bunch of picks, yada, yada, yada. You get yourself competitive. And in the case of the Raiders, you might even be pretty good. Miami's not quite ready for primetime yet. They're not better than the Bills or the Patriots, etc. But they're a team on the rise. You can rebuild. You can do it in this league. You just have to be patient and smart, something Washington hasn't been in 30 years.
Not bad. What else you got?
My second thing that I think I'm not going to overreact to really good teams losing in heinous ways after, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 weeks in this weird season. We tried not to do this anyway in general. Teams that are good are still good. So here's what I'm talking about. Tampa Bay lost a game where they were gross against Chicago, where their offense couldn't do diddly and or squadoosh, scoring 19 points. The Chiefs looked terrible. They couldn't stop the Raiders at all. They looked awful. Green Bay looked terrible against that same Tampa Bay team. You could lose to Tampa Bay. No shame in that. That's a good club. But losing the way they did makes you scratch your head a little bit. I'm not going to overreact to really good teams losing and having just a stinker of an outing kind of after a 4, 5, 6-game sample of them being really, really good. I'm going to rely on the bigger sample. That's the second thing that I think that I believe that I think.
I always feel that way. I think this year, to your point, makes it even more accurate to live that way as an analyst. But in general, this is such a week-to-week league. Everyone tries to make it out like this is some kind of linear 2-hour movie you watch start to finish. Week 4 and week 6 are completely irrelevant to one another. Week 4 and week 5 don't matter. There's not a carryover. Because the Cowboys were horrendous on Monday night doesn't mean they're just going to be terrible when they show up at FedEx. That's not the way this league works.
The third thing that I believe is the Steelers are the truth. They didn't win with style points through the first 4 weeks of the season, right? They were beating teams that aren't very good. They beat the Broncos by a score, let them hang around. Same with the Texans. The Eagles were back and forth with them until the Steelers, I think, had a late play on defense that stopped them. It was 38-29. But they throttled the Browns. Now that they've unleashed Chase Claypool in all the different ways that he can be unleashed, catching passes deep, running the football, and everything. I covet him so much. I loved him out of college. I love him now. He's amazing. They've got a tough couple games coming up here at Tennessee and at Baltimore. So they might go 1-1. Maybe they even go 0-2, honestly. Those are two losable games. But I'm going to try to remember that the Steelers are going to start playing better and better and better as Roethlisberger gets back and more comfortable. I think this defense is factual, and I think this offense is going to continue to improve now that they're letting Claypool eat.
Pittsburgh, one of three unbeatens in football. Seattle, 5-0, the lone NFC team yet to lose. The Steelers and the Titans, collision course for one another, a combined 10-0 through 6 weeks. Three things I think come your way next. And if you have something you think based on watching the NFL this past week or this season, you can call us now and get on the line at 800-636-1067. The Triple A, always on call listener lines, yours on the Fan. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Phones are open if you want to hop in with something you think, based on Week 6 in the NFL, 800-636-1067 on the AAA Always On Call listener line. You can also tweet us at Grant H. Paulson at Funny Danny. Our pal Guilo says, one thing I think, is that Washington's the worst football team in the league. Yes, worse than the Jets, the same Jets team that came here last year and blew out Washington. That's crazy to me. And I know that Washington's lost five in a row, and they just lost to the Giants. And a lot of people thought the Giants were the 31st best team in the NFL. Did you watch the Jets against the Dolphins? They can't move the ball. They can't get a first down. They were over the game on third down.
We're not the worst.
The Jets are – I don't know how they win this year. They will, by the way. They're going
to get
a win at some point. That's the NFL, and everyone will go crazy. But I would bet you a lot that they can't win more than twice. That's as bad a team right now as I can remember. I don't know that I've seen a team as incompetent as they are at this moment, particularly
Washington, the Giants. The Bengals have shown signs of life, but they're still only 1-4-1. They've been outscored by 30 points over the course of the season. Nobody's got the negative point differential the Jets do. It's -110. That's more than twice as much as Washington's been outscored by over the course of the season. But I'm just saying, Washington is 29th, 30th, 31st. Then there's, I think, 20 feet of crap. Then it's the Jets.
Right.
Nobody's saying this is a top 10 team in anybody's power rankings.
No. After last week, you could put them 31st, I think. And nobody could scream about it. I would have had the Giants 31 and maybe Washington 30 and the Bengals 29, something like that. Jacksonville might be 28. They've lost every single game since the opener, just like Washington. All right, let's get to my three things I think. You ready?
What do you think? Yep.
Number one, Justin Jefferson is tremendous. He is the next superstar at wide receiver. And the Vikings, I think, made a great trade when they moved on from Stephon Diggs, who's been excellent in Buffalo, and they got a bunch of picks. And they replaced Stephon Diggs on a rookie contract with Justin Jefferson. Now, that doesn't mean Diggs isn't good. He is. With Diggs, by the way, with all the great moments you get, and there are plenty of them, comes him being a big pain in the ass. Did you see when he basically walked back to the line of scrimmage late against the Chiefs and got a penalty because he wasn't set with his terrible body language? Did you see that play?
I saw that. That wasn't good.
That is part of the Stephon Diggs experience. And I know a lot of people are mad at me as I'm saying this here because he a terp. Sorry. That's Stephon Diggs, just as much as the deep ball and everything else. Great football player. Pain in the butt. Kind of diva wide receiver. Justin Jefferson, kid, to this point, I don't know if he's going to end up being a diva, if he'll grow into that. Right now, he just wants the football, and he wants to go help you make plays. And he and Kirk Cousins have a really good rapport. 537 yards and 3 touchdowns this season. He went for $166 and a pair this past week. It was his second 165-yard game in the last month. It was his third 100-yard game in his last four. He has come on like gangbusters. If you haven't seen him yet, check him out.
What an amazing receiver draft. And every team that needed receivers that didn't participate annoys me. And I'm looking right here in Washington. I'm also looking at Green Bay.
Remember, they did draft college wide receiver Antonio Gibson, Danny.
Ah, yes, of course they did. And Gandy Golden from Liberty.
Adam Gase. How do you still have a gig? I guess the thing I think, while I would never advocate, fire this guy immediately. The thing I think is that the Jets should put him out of his misery. You get to a point with these coaches where everyone knows that they are not going to be around at the end of the year, let alone next year, and you watch press conferences and you almost feel for these guys as human beings. I don't know his family. I'm guessing he has kids that are in school or maybe during the pandemic they're homeschooled, which is a blessing. But like, those kids have friends. You know what I mean? They all watch the news. They're all Jets fans in that community. Put this guy out of his misery. There's no chance that he is going to survive the next month. And if he does, that's even worse, because then he's just having these press conferences like Jim Zorn, having already known that he was going to be fired for months on end. 0-6 New York. He is not a good football coach. There's no case to be made that he is. He will never get a head coaching job again. I think the Jets should put Gase out of his misery and end this charade. I can't believe they didn't after that Dolphins game.
Just end it. Because what are we doing? It's Joe Flacco time still? I don't know how healthy Darnold is. But, I talk about this in Washington, not playing your first-round pick and going through these exercises is a waste of time. It's even more of a waste of time up there when you have a coach that's not in his first year trying to implement a program like Rivera is. Every second that Adam Gase is the head coach for the Jets is a waste of time. It's a waste of time. It is a waste of time. Back to you.
Third thing, I think I'll get more pushback on this one. Those two are pretty easy to agree with. Carson Wentz is just underrated. You know, he is not as bad as people think. He's a pretty good quarterback, in fact. Carson Wentz, I've got a metric, and it's an inexact science here, but with my PFF subscription, I looked up basically sacks and then official drops as defined by PFF this year. And Carson Wentz in that area has 40 total sacks and drops. Now, I know that not every sack is on the line, and sometimes it's on the quarterback, so that's where this is inexact. However, I'm using this metric to say the no-help stat, okay? How many times he gets sacked, how many times he gets dropped. 40 times this year for him. Just as an example, we say, oh, Haskins doesn't have a lot of help. You know, in his month on the field, 16 times he was sacked or a pass was dropped. Only three official drops for Washington from Dwayne Haskins this year. So I guess my point is this. No one else has more than 33 in this category. Joe Burrow, who stands to reason, terrible team, first overall pick, awful offensive line, has no help. Carson Wentz is playing behind third stringers on the offensive line for much of this year. He is running for his life. The number one wide receiver in Philly for most of the season has been a college quarterback, and now it's a guy who went to Broad Run High School. I don't even know how he showed up in Philly. I think he was undrafted free agent somewhere, and they got him off the scrap heap. I have no idea where Travis Fulgham came from. But the point of the dude's story is we condone Carson Wentz, who's had a 33-touchdown MVP-like season before an injury, as being terrible. I don't think he's played well, but this is what I'm capable of doing that a lot of people aren't, I think. When a quarterback plays poorly, whether it be for a game or a month, we say he stinks. No, it's like anybody else at any other sport. He's had a bad month, or he's not playing great right now, and he's not having a great season. But I think Carson Wentz's problem is a lot less Carson Wentz and a lot more everything around him. That's something I think.
Here's my counter to that. I don't know what happened to his accuracy. That used to be the thing, right? He could put the ball where he needed to put it. And I know he hasn't always had great help or consistent health of his receivers, or, you know, Ertz is now banged up. And you're right, it's an undrafted or whatever, wherever Travis Fulgham came from. But his accuracy has really dipped from the last couple of seasons, where we were going, hey, he's making chicken salad out of whatever. Last year was really good with nothing around him. 64% completion, 4,100 yards almost, 27 touchdowns, 7 picks. Just a magic act on a weekly basis, having a team that really wasn't very good competitive, right? 9-7 last year. This year, everything you're saying is true. I just can't figure out what happened to the accuracy. I don't know if he's been hit too much. I don't know if he's afraid. I don't know if he's, you know, under constant assault. I just know that a guy that used to be pretty accurate all of a sudden doesn't seem to be.
So adjusted completion percentage, I think, is a great stat. Adjusted completion percentage accounts for factors that hurt the passer they can't control. Doesn't necessarily say this is how accurate they are. I don't know that there's a good way to, other than watching a player, to say this is how accurate they are. But it accounts for drops, throwaways, spiked passes that go as incompletions, batted passes at the line of scrimmage, passes where the quarterback was hit while he threw the ball. You know, all the things that happen, and it just looks like an incompletion on a completion percentage, which, you know, makes this more accurate. Follow? Carson Wentz this year, to your point, 70.5%. Sounds great. 31st among 38 quarterbacks that I'm looking at on this chart here. 31st on that line. Now, for the record, Dwayne Haskins, if you're curious, if you search those 38 quarterbacks, comes in at 35th. But you're right. I mean, he has not been nearly as accurate this year. It is a huge knock against him. And I think it's part of why I would say he's not playing well. I just think there are factors. Now, in no way am I endorsing Kyle Allen as being good, but I would point out, so far he's second in this metric after Russell Wilson at 82%. Very small sample size of a lot of short passes, okay? So congratulations, I suppose. But you've gone from an adjusted completion percentage in the 66 range to the 82 range very, very early with Kyle Allen, and he hadn't really stretched the field at all, so we'll see. Now, that number is obviously going to come down. Grant and Danny on the Fan, those are the things we think. 6 weeks into the NFL season. Next on G&D, our double play, what's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports.
Hey, guys. Danny Ruye here from my pals at Ted Britt Ford. I'm a Ted Britt guy. I can prove it multiple times. Ted Britt customer. right here. That's right. I love these guys. I went back, God, what year was it? Probably, like, what, 2016 or so? We were shopping around. Family was growing, right? We had another kid on the way. We knew, okay, so we got to figure something else out, right? We need a bigger car. So we went shopping, test drove a couple different places, ended up at Tedbert Ford, right? Found the Ford Edge, couldn't believe the deal. Sales experience was so great. And I said, as we were driving away, I said to my wife, when it's my time to get a car, which is coming up pretty soon, I'm going right back to Tedbert Ford. And that's exactly what I did. I've loved my experience each and every time. They're really good at what they do. That's how they've been doing it for more than 60 years. That's right, more than 60 years helping folks just like you and me. Let them take care of you the way they've taken care of me and so many others in this area, right? Every day, Tedbert Ford, not some wacky, screaming, shouting special. Every day, Tedbert Ford, 120% of your Kelley Blue Book value for your trade-in, right? And when you buy from Tedbert Ford, Tedbert for life, lifetime vehicle coverage, powertrain, service loaners, battery replacement, Virginia State inspection, all for life. Go see my guys at Tedbert Ford and tell them that he sent you.
G&D on 106.7 The Fan. We're on Twitter at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny. You can hit us up whenever you'd like. We're going blitzing at noon, as we always do, and at 12:18 today. We're excited about this, and we talked earlier about the name change update from Jason Wright. There was another thing that came up in his interview on TV yesterday on ABC7, which is how interested would you be in going to a game? Because it sounds like there is some momentum toward, not this week where they're just going to have family and friends, but the next home game in early November, there might be a few thousand fans in the stands. Would you be someone trying to get one of those tickets? We'll talk about that next hour right here on Grant and Danny. Let's get to our double play and talk about what's going on in our lives. Nothing to do with sports.
Grant, I could have done this yesterday. I wanted to give everybody a chance to see it. 9 days. We are 9 days away from the season 2 premiere of The Mandalorian. This is, quite simply, the best thing that Disney has done since taking over the Star Wars universe and franchise. Other movies have been good. Rogue One was good. I think some of the newer films, you know, got beat up some, but were fun and maybe a little bit underrated even. Some of the cartoons are also really good that were sort of bridging the gap between kids and young adults. This is the best thing they've done. It's what happens when you let talented people do talented people things without interfering. It's outstanding and it's excellent. The big deal for Star Wars fans behind the scenes here. So you've got, basically, just to set the scene again, the Mando, or the Mandalorian, reunited in the trailer with Greef Karga, played by Carl Weathers, and Cara Dune, the female bounty hunter, or former Imperial soldier, or shock trooper, rather, in various methods. He's basically got to make sure he's keeping the child safe, and he's going to try to return it to his own kind. That sort of sets up the backdrop, and the whole galaxy is hunting him. It implies also in the trailer you see X-Wings. We always think of X-Wing pilots as good guys, but from Mando's perspective, maybe they're not good guys. You know, Moff Gideon is behind the scenes. He wielded the Darksaber in Episode 8 last year, and everybody freaked the hell out. Who knows what the hell I'm talking about? So, you've got everybody searching for Mando. The world's against him, and he's talking about finding other Mandalorians. If the following thing happens, people are going to have conniptions. I'm one of those people. The idea that there's the tease, there's a little hint, there's little nuggets placed along the trail here. We might see Boba Fett, Grant. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm going to say it one more time because you're probably a little bit behind the times. We might see Boba Fett in season 2 of The Mandalorian. If that happens, you're going to have to send someone to check on me. I might faint. I might pass out. I might need to be hospitalized. The idea that I could see Boba Fett on screen once again in an awesome adventure would make me beyond happy. I would be so happy that I would pass out. Because original canon says he didn't die. He didn't die, Grant. In the Endless Dune Sea, he didn't die at the hands of the almighty and all-powerful Sarlacc. He was actually able to escape after the fact. Not a lot of people know that. If that comes to fruition, Star Wars fans will lose their collective minds. You might also see other Mandalorians like Sabine Wren or Bo-Katan. We know
Ahsoka
Tano. You're
not going to see Bo-Katan.
You might see them, Grant. Other
Mandalorians. You're not going to see Boca Raton.
You might see them. And we already know that Ahsoka Tano is going to be in this season as well.
I'm sure.
This is just, dude, nuggets, delicious morsels for Star Wars fans. The best thing Star Wars has done since the original trilogy, The Mandalorian, 9 days.
Did I see Boba Fett in the movies that you made me watch?
Yes.
Which one was Boba Fett?
Boba Fett is the bounty hunter, wearing the same Mandalorian armor. So when Darth Vader gets
Wait, this is the guy that I think I said is like the worst bad guy ever. His death was so nonchalant. It was like him and five other guys falling into a plant, right?
Yeah, his death is so underwhelming and underserving of this incredible character, right? So Darth Vader has a bounty hunter lineup where he's, because he can't find them on his own, so he hires the bounty hunter scum. He gets all these guys together. It's Dengar, it's Bossk, it's IG-88, and he stops in front of Boba Fett. And he puts a finger in Boba Fett's face and says, and no disintegrations. The implication is that Boba Fett's known for disintegrating things.
Oh, man. No disintegrations.
Because, like, you got to make sure I want them alive. You can't have disintegrations, Boba. I know you're used to disintegrating things, but in this case, please don't disintegrate them.
And then Boba Fett just dies by accidentally stubbing his toe and falling into a plant.
After Han, who can't see, is going, Boba Fett, Boba Fett, where? And then he hits some. I mean, oh, it was such a lame death. But original canon, he didn't actually die.
Hmm. So I remember thinking, though, when I watched it, and I think I said it as part of my film review to you.
And you were right.
Boba Fett, for this character that I've heard about, you know, his name it rings out with, like, you know, Chewie and Han Solo and who's the fat tub of goo?
Jabba the Hutt
and all these other guys, right? So I'm thinking, oh, Boba Fett, he's a stud. He's the real deal. This guy's an eater of worlds. Like, this is a bad guy. I got to be scared of him. And then, I accidentally go bend down to tie my shoe and headbutt him, and he falls into some endless pit.
His death was so lame. His death was so lame. And everybody's bitched about that forever. Because it's for a character that's that awesome, to go out that way was just so frustrating. So there's this huge backstory with the guy, and it's so much fun. He's incredible. He's one of the best characters in Star Wars history that has such limited screen time that makes such a huge impact.
Well, I'm excited for you.
We might see him.
I can't imagine I'll watch, but I know now that we have Disney Plus, it's probably something that the plot will be into, so I might catch a scene here or there that I can bounce on. Next, our Beltway Blitz. We are Grant Green.
Could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.